This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Tiansen.
And a good day to everyone out there. Welcome to episode number 96 of TPF Live, the world's fastest hour of racing talk. With Rob Tiansen and Nathan Solomon, we're so glad that you could join us for this pre-Thanksgiving edition of our show. I know we have one more episode until we get to Thanksgiving, but hey, it's mid-November. You know, you folks at home are thinking about the turkey dinner and holiday season that's coming around. So why don't we think ahead and think about the season of giving and food and family and friends by giving you folks another off-season edition of our show. So there's no post or pre-anything kind of race weekend stuff. We're just going to talk NASCAR and also introduce you folks to an 18-year-old race car driver who is up and coming, has been racing literally since she was 2 years old. And to be quite honest, this is a really fascinating interview we're going to be doing with a driver who will race about anything, but most currently races in Nitro Cross competition. So that driver would be, of course, Gray Ledbetter. So I'm just excited to introduce her to all of you folks at home. But for the meantime, let's go bring in and introduce Nathan to the fans. If you've never been a fan of the show or listened to us, I hope you've been a fan of the show, but if you've never listened to us, Nathan's my normal co-host on the show, and we're both St. Bonaventure connections. I graduated, of course, earlier this year as a grad student, and Nathan's in his senior year at St. Bonaventure University. So, Nathan, how are you doing today? I know the St. Bonaventure team, they've been busy.
Yeah, I've been doing well. I feel like there's not been very many instances where we've been able to do this multiple weeks in a row where, like, both of us have been able to be here. So that's good. But yeah, things are going well. We're in basketball season now, so I'm back on the TV grind. I've got some TV coming up here in a couple days. I'm covering men's games as well. So even though it's the off season here on the NASCAR side of things, for me, I'm never not busy.
It's always on the go, and if it's not for the sports stuff, you also got senior year stuff to go along with all of that, right?
Yeah, that's 70 something. That's kind of crazy too. We're like less than 200 days away from graduation, so all that stuff is coming very quickly. So I'm very busy, that's for sure.
I do not envy you, but I've been there before, so I feel your pain, and I feel the pain for every senior out there. So I got you on that, don't you worry. But always glad to have you back on the show consistently. Like I said, we've been kind of busy where our schedules don't coalesce, but we're doing it again consistently. And unlike Toucher and Rich, we're not going to go anywhere. We're sticking around for this show. Boston joke right there. But anyways, why don't we hear from our presenting sponsors, SpoilerDieCast.com, right now. Hey, racing fans. Are you in the hunt for the latest and greatest in diecast cars? Head on over to SpoilerDieCast.com to get the latest offerings in Lionel Racing, NASCAR collectibles, IndyCar collectibles from Greenlight Collectibles, and much more. If you spend $20 or more in in-stock or pre-order items, you can save 5% off your order and get free shipping with promo code TPF. So head on over to SpoilerDieCast.com, spend $20 or more, and use promo code TPF to get free shipping and 5% off your order. Evan and his team get those orders out fast in lightning speed fashion. A proud sponsor of TPF Live. Get your Black Friday shopping, your holiday season shopping done on SpoilerDieCast.com. Lionel's getting those containers a lot faster than they anticipated. You know what that means, folks? Save some money with that promo code TPF. And if you use that code, you'll save 5% off and get free shipping. And you're helping to fund TPF because we want to deliver the goods to you folks, whether that's doing more with our podcast or doing more of the racetrack, traveling to more races. A little bit of shopping goes a long ways to helping us out to be a big outlet. So do it up and support a small business like SpoilerDieCast.com. But right now, let's go and get into Podium Perspectives, powered by SpoilerDieCast.com. Now, the first topic is kind of coalesce with topic number two. But the NASCAR Xfinity Series side of things has been pretty busy, I'd say, since the checkered flag flew at Phoenix Raceway, because Brendan Poole announced his plans for next season. And it's exciting because he's going to be moving over to Alpha Prime Racing in 2024. Now, Alpha Prime, I know, had a bit of a struggle this season, but with the driver of the week kind of things that were going on, and being a three-car team, of course, they didn't get the consistent feedback that they were looking for. But with Brendan Poole, who's a really talented driver who knows how to get the most out of his machines, I mean, Nathan, how big is this for them to have a consistent driver for Ryan Ellis and also for BP? How can he fare next year?
Yeah, this feels like it's mutually good for both sides. I mean, Alpha Prime has a little bit more stability. I mean, you kind of look at their roster, really, in 2022, so I guess their first season were under the Alpha Prime branding. They had a ton of different drivers coming in and out on part-time slates, and they only had two cars back then. And now here they are with a three-car team. They have two of those cars that are basically sold for full-time rides. So that's really good for them. That shows that they're making progress. They're narrowing in on drivers that they want for their future. And then for Brendan Poole, I don't want to say he had gotten forgotten about the last couple of years, but he hasn't had a whole lot of opportunities over these last couple of years. So now that he's back on a full-time basis, you know, I know he ended up pretty much full-time with JD Motorsports this past year, and kind of bounced around a few other places as well. But I think that now that he'll be in a car every single week, he'll be able to build something with that team. You know, I feel like he will really mesh well with what Tommy Joe Martins is all about and all those guys over there. So, I think he'll do really well. I mean, I think, you know, you also have to manage the expectations for that team. I think, you know, a good goal for them would probably be top 20 in Xfinity points. I think that'd be a really successful season for them, especially with how competitive the Xfinity series has really gotten over these last couple of years. But I really do think top 20 is attainable. You know, Brendan Poole is an underrated driver. He's shown he's had success when he's gotten those few opportunities in high-level rides. I just hope that and think that this will be a really good combination for him. And we'll, you know, maybe see a couple top 15, top 10 finishes in there, and overall just consistency, and at the end of the day, a solid points finish.
Exactly. And the fact that he's got a good teammate in Ryan Ellis who knows how to take care of his equipment as well, I think it's going to bode well for APR. And it personally, in my opinion, if they just stick to being a two-car team with just Ellis and Poole, they're going to be really solid. I think top 20 is certainly achievable, and then they can move those goalposts. The more they get consistent, the more they establish their presence. Kind of like what we saw with Sam Hunt Racing over the last few years, where they were building towards being a top 20 team, and then, you know, they were able to get a Kaz Grala. They got a bunch of different drivers in the other car and were able to get good finishes. So I look for them to be really strong when it comes to next season with APR, with the lineup of Brendan Poole and of course, with Ryan Ellis. It's going to be so exciting to see those two drivers prosper, to say the least. Now, another driver who I think we need to keep our eye on for next season is a driver who also drove for JD Motorsports last year. And that driver, of course, would be Kyle Weatherman, because he's going to be moving over to DGM Racing next season. Now, I know DGM Racing may not be like a prestigious team, but Nathan, you've been following everything that goes on in the Xfinity Series. How good of an opportunity is this for Kyle Weatherman to be in a full-time ride with this team?
It's good. You know, I think Weatherman, this is the first time that he's been able to go full-time in something. So that's certainly a big box for him to check and a big accomplishment there. At the same time, I'd love to see him in a really high-level seat or a really high-level ride, because I think he's one of the most underrated drivers in the garage. Last year, we saw him really shine with Jesse Ruggi Motorsports, or in 2022, rather. You know, that team had some underfunded equipment, and they went out and they ran really well with him in a handful of races that they did. I want to say he qualified top 10 a couple of times. He was like 6th or something at Michigan in qualifying. Like, he had crazy speed and had a bunch of top 15 finishes. So he really showed that he deserves to have a good ride. But I think this is a good start for him. I think that down the road we could see him in a high-level Xfinity Series ride. But Kyle Weatherman, if he can get a little bit more funding behind him, I think he's a guy that has a really great future in this sport. He just needs all the resources behind him to succeed. But, you know, really, really glad he finally has an opportunity to go full-time, and I think we'll be hearing his name a lot here in the near future.
I certainly think so, too. And he's a driver who, I want to say, when he drove for Mike Harmon's team, I want to say maybe a year or two ago, or even during COVID. He did so well in that car, and you were the one who noticed that, I think. You were like, this guy needs a good ride.
And I mean, you mentioned Mike Karmann Racing. I mean, and I don't want to downplay them or anything, but he got that car into the show a lot. And we've seen that car over these last couple of years just struggle to get into the show. And he was getting the car into the race and finishing races too with, I'd say reasonable finishes, like top 25s, which I think is a reasonable expectation for that car. So he's kind of gained this reputation of a really clean driver that just knows how to maximize his equipment. And I think that really fits, what DGM Racing is going for. So, we've seen that in the past with Josh Williams. We see that with Ross Chastain. I think it's a really good fit.
I certainly think so too. And I think if Kyle can do a good job in this, to me, again, I think to your point, being a top 20, top 25 driver, just getting good finishes. Hey, you never know. I mean, you have to start somewhere. And if team owners notice that you can do so well in cars that don't typically contend towards the midfield or, the bottom echelon of a front finishing finish, I mean, they're gonna pay attention to you and maybe bring you over. And of course, get some sponsor dollars along the way too. So, a lot of great moves in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, and I'm sure this is not the end of it because we are still waiting on what goes on next season at Coliger Racing. We're not going to spitball what we think will happen. All we can say is there's a lot of moving and shaking that's yet to happen, and we're going to certainly let you folks know at home when those become official. And then, of course, you'll hear from Nathan and I on our opinions on that. Let's just say that it's going to be a different lineup next year. That much for sure. Now, one certainty that we can talk about in the Cup side is that Ben Bieschore is going to be moving on up to the NASCAR Cup Series again, and he'll be the crew chief for John Hunter Nemechek with the Legacy Motor Club number 42 Toyota team in 2024. It's a pretty logical move, in my opinion, considering the fact that Ben Bieschore and John Hunter Nemechek had a heck of a season in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, and it came out on the one race where they didn't get the reward to be a champion, but otherwise they put in a championship type of season in Xfinity. So I'm not saying they're going to go and tear it up in Cup, but Nathan, how much of a move, big move is this for JHN to have a crew chief that he's familiar with?
Yeah, I think it's really good. They definitely have the camaraderie. They know how to win races together. And I think, going into year number three of this next gen car, it's also important that Bieschore has experience with the next gen car, and he does because he worked with Kyle Busch there for, was it 2 or 3 years there at Joe Gibbs Racing before Busch made his switch over to RCR. So he's familiar with how the next gen car drives, a lot of the elements there. And I mean, I think that's super important for a guy like John Hunter because even though he's not a Cup rookie, he kind of is in a sense because this is his first year going into things with the next gen car. He has 2 Cup Series starts in the next gen era. Both of them are ironically at Homestead Miami Speedway under kind of two interesting circumstances there. But he's got a lot of learning that he's going to have to do. So it's going to be like a rookie season all over again. So to have a guy that, A, you're really familiar with, and B, has some familiarity with that car, I think that's the smartest thing Legacy can do. Obviously, I'm sure Toyota might have a little bit of a voice there because remember, like, can't forget, this is a Toyota team now. This is not a Chevrolet funded team. It's all TRD. This organization is supposedly getting the same resources that JGR and 2311 has been getting. So again, I'm sure Toyota had a voice there, and they're going to do everything they can to make sure that that team in that organization is as competitive as possible next season. So I think pairing Nemechek with a guy that he's super familiar with is step one with that, and I think those two together can have a really solid year and at least be in the mix to make the playoffs. I don't know if they're gonna be able to go out and win races together, but I think at least in year one at the Cup level with the two of them, I think they can at least be in a mix for the top 16 spot when Darlington rolls around.
That's a really good point because the Darlington Raceway weekend is not the playoff opener. It's the cutoff to the playoffs. So we'll be on safe when it comes to Darlington and JHN and the number 42 team because that team certainly could use some consistency and not the darkness that shrouded them all of this year. And hopefully 2024 can bring some good news and good prosperity to that organization. Especially with, a lot of the people that are going to be on that team. Of course, Matt Kenseth is going to be on that team as well as an advisor. So you can't doubt the fact that Jimmy Johnson is trying to get good people around that organization to have a better time than what they've had in 2023. It was pretty rough, to say the least. Now, we're going to end Podium Perspectives on kind of a sad note here, but if you've been following along on X with Dave Moody's posts, then you pretty much know as of Tuesday evening that Ken Squire's health has taken a turn for the worse, and to be quite honest, we may not have a lot of time left with a legendary NASCAR Hall of Famer, an announcer who has done so much for NASCAR. I mean, he's basically the reason why we have MRN Radio. He's the reason why, you know, CBS took a chance on having a flag-to-flag live coverage of the Daytona 500. Ken Squire has done so much for racing as a broadcaster on radio and TV, and as a producer with his company that eventually was what became NASCAR Media. And, you know, it breaks my heart to talk about it, but at the same time, I am also comforted by the fact that, you know, Ken's going to likely spend his final days with family and friends, and the love of people like us who pursued racing because of him. I've personally got to meet Ken a few times when he's been at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. I can't tell you how genuine he is. And there's this quote that I want to share, and Nathan can chime in, of course, a little bit in a second. Ken reminded me about what NASCAR is all about. He said, "Young man, racing is supposed to be part sport and part entertainment. If it's just purely sports, it lacks the entertainment. It doesn't give you the reason why you're able to enjoy the competition out there. You need the drama, you need the excitement, you need the storylines to engage fans into watching this every week. And if you do that, then the entertainment can also make sure that the sport side of things is just as good." I'm sending my thoughts and prayers to the Squire family during this tough time, and to his family and friends, of course, with MRN, and people like Mike Joy, Dr. Dick Bergren, and people who've been influenced by him. I know a lot of our team is. And Nathan, I know you're young and you may have not seen a lot of Ken Squire races, but I'm imagining you watched him do those stage two parts of the Southern 500 a couple years ago. But, you know, what's your thoughts on Ken Squire's legacy?
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the legends, right? I mean, he shaped NASCAR and NASCAR media to what it is today, you know, on the TV side, on the radio side. You know, without Ken Squire, I don't know if we probably don't have at least the radio side of NASCAR to this level. We probably don't have MRN as what it is today. We might not even have a Sirius XM NASCAR radio as to what it is today. So obviously his impact is massive on what the growth of this sport was and continues to be. But yeah, to your point, obviously, you know, I'm younger, right? I didn't start watching NASCAR until 2008, so I was never really around for Ken Squire races, but I know how much of an impact he had on older generations of NASCAR fans. So obviously, like you said, our thoughts and prayers to him and his family and everybody over at MRN and all the broadcast partners from NASCAR. But you know, obviously a massive legacy on where the sport is today, and you know, he'll be deeply missed.
He will, for sure. And I just want to personally say, even if they don't hear it, thank you, Ken Squire. Thank you for everything you've done for the sport, to a lot of folks like us who are pursuing our dreams in this industry. And yeah, man, it sucks. But at the same time, like I said, we're going to try to celebrate his life, you know, celebrate the man. And whenever, you know, the time comes for him to take on the next step of his journey, you know, or the world will be a little bit different without him, but racing is a lot better because of him, to say the least. So thank you, Kenleen Dean Squire, a legend for sure, and thinking of you, my friend, up in Vermont. Now, I know that's kind of a sad way to talk about the end of Podium Perspectives, but, you know, we always try to keep you fans at home about the latest news that goes on, and Ken is certainly news to us at all times. But if there's anything you'd like us to talk about during the off season, just let us know. You know, whether it's feedback or topics you'd want us to chat about on a future episode, get with us on our social media platforms, whether that's X, Instagram, Facebook, or Threads. Nathan's handle is nsolly02, and I'm of course at Rob Tiongson, and our general one is at The Podium Finish. So get with that, folks. And yeah, we'll have a lot more to talk about in the Thanksgiving week edition of our show. But with that, it is time to head on over to the hot seat And this week's hot seat is with Gray Ledbetter. So let's get with the hot seat segment right now. Welcome back, everybody, to a special edition of In the Hot Seat here with Rob Tiongson, the Podium Finish's editor-in-chief and NMPA journalist. And on today's edition of In the Hot Seat, we have a really special guest. We're not going to the stock car scene. We're going to go a little bit into the dirty side of things with motorsports, with dirt track racing and off-road racing with 18-year-old race car driver Gray Ledbetter. And I'm so excited to have Gray here because she's literally back from Phoenix, and not at the racetrack in Phoenix, but in the great outdoors of Phoenix. So Gray, before we get started, you had a great weekend at Phoenix. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I got back last night. I don't think I got back to my house till about 9 o'clock. So it was a long day of travel yesterday. And then the weekend went great.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. I'm sure you're a little tired, though.
Not too bad.
Only to be so young. If you were my age, you'd be like, why this early? But it's so awesome. I read about your background, of course. I've seen your social media, and that's why we have you here on the hot seat. So, you know, for folks at home who are going to be listening in or reading this on our website, obviously these are NASCAR fans who are just going to learning about you for the first time. What are some of your earliest memories about racing that inspired you to go after this career?
I'm not sure. I've been doing it for so long. It just kind of, nobody in my family's raced, so I have no history or no background in it. I just kind of wanted the like little cars you get at Walmart. And my parents said no when I was 2 years old because we have a gravel driveway and they just didn't want to listen to it. And so instead they got me like this electric four-wheeler. And I started riding that when I was two. And then our friends rode dirt bikes. They're like, okay, put her on a dirt bike when she turns three with training wheels. And then I got off training wheels and I started racing when I was four. And then it's kind of just carried on from there. I still love dirt bikes. I'm slowly getting back into it, not racing, not really riding any big bikes, but back into the world of pit bikes, which is making me feel good because it's like bringing me back to my childhood.
That's awesome. I can't imagine being like 2 or 3 years old and, you know, being able to do that. I guess it was something that came naturally to you and you're like in your own little way saying to your parents, you're like, guys, I want to do this.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't remember it. I was so young. I just know that I got the passion for it when I was that age, and then it just kept continuing up through dirt bikes, go-karts, mini outlaws, whatever else I've ran. There's been so many things.
That's amazing. I mean, great. I can't even recall when I was 2 or 3 years old what I wanted to do, and much less still pursuing it, because a lot of kids say, oh, I want to be a bus driver or a doctor, and here you are, you're fulfilling something that you may not remember exactly what you said, but you're doing that. Is it something that's been within you in your body and your blood saying, you know what, I want to be a race car driver?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just when I was like younger, my parents were like, you can go, if you don't want to go to the racetrack day, you can go to your friend's birthday party or go stay at their house or do this, or we could go on vacation. And it's just like, no, I'd rather be at the racetrack. Like, I gave up everything as a child to go do that. Like, I had friends still, but like, that was just like, I'll see you at school, maybe come over when I'm not at the racetrack. But now it's just, I mean, it's still the same way today.
I mean, and how many kids can say, or teenagers now can say, hey, I'm going to race against Travis Pastrana and Leo Block. Like, does that sometimes make you go, holy moly, I'm doing this?
Yeah, absolutely. Travis was an idol to me growing up and still is. And now I get to see, and now I get to race against him, which is surreal, honestly. And we're doing things with him and it just doesn't feel real. And it is, and it's been real for the past like 6 months or so. But I looked up to him so much as a kid just because everything that he got in, everything that he took place in, he did so well and advanced in that aspect and just has forever made, you know, every child's dream of watching and looking up to him.
I was going to say, when I read about you, Gray, I feel like you're very comparable to what Travis does, because you've raced about anything, which I was so impressed with, because, you know, if you're a stock car driver that's young, you basically have done like late models, Bandoleros, legend cars and all that. You, meanwhile, like you said, you did motocross for a while. And I don't know, I'm not a parent yet, but I would have a hard time saying, yeah, great, go ahead and race a motocross bike. But how was that like for you, from what you could remember?
It was, I never had fear really on a dirt bike. I don't know what it was. I think I have more fear now in things now, just because I know I can comprehend the consequences of it. But I don't know. It was just something that, like, we had a dirt bike track in my backyard. So I would come home from school, jump on my bike, and then ride till it got dark, which was only like 2 hours because it would be winter. But my dad would like yell at me to get off my dirt bike. He's like, it's too dark. You can't ride anymore. And I'm like, but I can still see. I can see enough. And it was just like, I don't know. The passions just never really went away. And I eventually grew out a dirt bike just because, long story short, it's very difficult to make it anywhere on a dirt bike as a female, just because it is very physically demanding. And that is one thing that sucks about it. But in other terms, it's got me into four wheels and got me where I am today.
So it's kind of like a Northern Star for you in a way.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And I did read somewhere that at age 7, you had a bit of a difficult situation that you had to overcome. And you talked about how you've been going back on a dirt bike and you kind of understand the fear of it. But when you were 7 and you got hurt, were you like kind of going like, oh no, I may not be able to do this anymore? Or were you thinking, you know, great, I'm going to be okay. I just have to get over this.
I remember, because it was a really kind of odd crash, but I didn't get off the starting line. And then I got pissed at myself because I was so far ahead of the people in front of me who I was racing against, and got cross-started and went into a dirt burn. It's whatever. And I just remember crashing. And then I remember my dad running up towards me, and he came and asked me if I was okay. And I was just like, I can't ride. I was like, I'm hurt. And he was like, okay, so she actually is hurt, because she normally would crash and just be fine and want to get back up immediately. And I didn't. So he was like, okay, yeah, she's actually hurt. And then we went to the hospital. We did all the stuff, whatever. And I remember all I wanted to do was get back on the bike. But my biggest thing was like wanting to ride my like Razor scooter around the house. And I was like, how long till I can do that? And it was probably like 2 weeks until I was back doing that. And then it was like, okay, when can I get on the trampoline? And it was like, okay, now can I get back on a dirt bike? So it was just like, even after breaking my shoulder, I don't think any fear was in me after the fact. And if it was, I don't remember.
That's amazing. Cause I know if I was a little kid, I would have been crying and then my parents would have yanked me out. But I think that's, it was built within you to be like, you know, it's a setback, but I'm ready to go back at it. And your parents are like, fine, great, go ahead and do it. You know, that's just amazing. And I think that kind of gave you the bravery that you have to have as a race car driver. I know it's kind of like a very basic question to get into before we get back to you, you know, talking more about you, but a lot of race car drivers will often say, well, I don't have a fear of racing or the dangers of it. But in your perspective, is it good to have a little bit of a healthy dose of fear?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think everybody needs it, or you just overpush the limit to the extent of crashing every time. And you need to find your own limit. And that comes with fear also. But the best, I think everybody has fear. Even stunt performers, I think, have fear. It's just the fact of being able to not necessarily block it out, but know that this is the consequence, but this is also what I love. And this is what I have to do. And I have to take the consequences out of the equation is kind of the biggest thing. It's just pushing past that to get to do what you love.
Exactly. Because everything in life has a risk. The moment you get out of your bed, anything could happen, right?
And something can happen with just walking on the street or walking down the stairs.
I would hate to think about that thought the next time I go downstairs from my room. That's going to be funny. I'll just blame you for that. I'm kidding.
That's fine. Now,
you were talking about how Travis was one of your heroes. And I've always asked this to any kind of driver, but who were some of the drivers that you looked up to that made you realize, yeah, I want to do this?
I think Travis was by far the biggest. I think I've talked about him forever. As long as I can remember, I did something of him when I was in second grade. It was like this poster thing. We had to pretend we were this person and make a speech. And I actually had picked him. But I think it was him. And then when I was growing up on dirt bikes, it was always Ashley Filick, just because she does so much. And on top of it, she's deaf, which just is mind-boggling to me, because I don't know how you can. It's just all about feel, but it's just crazy to me.
It's like these are like magicians at work, but then when you get to meet them in person, it makes you realize they're just as human as any of us. And I'm sure, like, when you've met at least Travis, I've met him before when he raced in NASCAR, and he's just so electric, but like you almost think it's an act, but when you meet him in person, he's just generally an energy drink in person.
Yes, he's like one of the nicest people and most genuine people I know. And he does so many crazy things. So it's so nice to just see that and see like the calmness and the wholeness that he has.
I agree. And I just want to have his enthusiasm as well, because he's like in his late 40s and he's acting like he's still a teenager. And I'm like, give me some of your secret mojo, because I would love that as a writer. So
For
that'd
sure.
be cool. Now, one of your most pivotal years, actually, Gray, was just a couple years ago in 2019, because not only were you doing some off-road racing, but you did some rally cross competition. So what was it like to compete in those different kinds of cars and get acclimated to these different kinds of tracks?
Yeah, for sure. I went to X Games in 2015 when they ran Nitro, or when they ran Rallycross in X Games. And I was like, from that point, which I was 9 years old, I was like, I want to do that. Like, I told myself and I told my dad, I was like, I want to do that in the future. And then I ended up getting with we went to a race and I made connections like a year later, I think, 2 years later, and started talking to people and this and that. And then I ended up getting with Johnny and CJ Greaves in the off-road short course stuff. And they're still to this day family to me. They have such a big name, but they're just normal people that live life every day like everybody else. And I got with them in 2018, went into 2019, and that was one of the biggest years. And then I got an opportunity to go race ARX with Rallycross in the lights car, and it was so much fun. It was like, it's still to this day, even though I'm back into Rallycross, it still to this day doesn't feel like it actually happened because it was such a dream and then it became a reality and I just still don't think I've processed it. But the lights cars are so much fun to drive. And it's crazy to be back around them, even though I'm not necessarily in one, getting to watch them and be around them and watch, everything going on and watching Leah race them is so much fun.
I can just imagine, because like the way you're describing it, it's almost like living in a dream, and you want someone to not to pinch you, because if you do, then you're back to where you didn't want to be. You want to be living the dream, right?
Yeah, I guess that's one way to put it.
I think it's so cool. And the thing that I really admire about you, Gray, is that you're just willing to do anything, because not a couple of years ago, I think you raced at what, 410 wing sprints and the World of Outlaws and the All-Star Circuit, which was going to be the High Limit Racing Series next year. I mean, when you did these previous racing series in motocross and rallycross and all of that, how did they help you with the dirt track stuff?
Everything works together. One of the biggest people in my life was Patrick Sandell, and still is. I met him in a few years ago. I know we went to Sweden in 2017 to go drive a lights car on ice, which again does not feel like it happened. But he was like, the biggest thing is drive anything that you can drive. And it's not necessary, which there's nothing wrong with it, but it's not necessarily the NASCAR route of going go-karts and then late models and ARCA and then so up. It was like, if you have the opportunity to drive something, drive it. So I went and I rode dirt bikes, and then I went into go-karts, and then I drove legend cars, and I've driven many outlaws, and I have driven a late model, and I've driven an ARCA car, and I've driven side by sides and rally cars and this and that. And then I had the opportunity to drive sprint cars, and it was like, I have a picture of myself standing next to a wing of one when I was 12 years old, 11 years old, and I didn't even know what they were at the time. And I don't think I did for another few years after that. But I have a picture of myself, and little did I know that however many years later I'd be racing one. Nonetheless, World of Outlaws World Finals being my second race ever in a 410, which was insane.
I can imagine. It's like being thrusted from middle school, and here you are in grad school all of a sudden, right? You're like, hello, here I am.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, let's talk about more of your recent efforts. I kind of led into it about you racing at Phoenix in early November when this interview airs. And you raced at Phoenix for rounds 4 and 5 of the SXX. Let me start over. SXS series. That's a mouthful. I'll get used to that. But what did it mean for you to get a great finish? You got a podium on Saturday and you got a fourth the next day. I mean, how awesome was that for you?
Yeah, it felt really good to get it. I have been working towards it all season, with that, and I've been finishing right off the box every single time. And it's been very tough and just trying to like mentally be like, okay, now I just got to push forward the next race and then push forward the next race. But everybody that I race against in that class is incredible. And we have so much fun in the pits nonetheless. Like at Utah, we would go race. Come off the track, everybody would be super competitive on the track. We all race each other clean, but we're all really like nice to each other in a way because we don't want to wreck each other. Because if we wreck, there's only so many guys that fix the cars because it's spec series. And then if somebody crashes somebody and they can't race, then that's one person out of the class. And that's not what we want. So everybody goes out, we race each other hard, but super clean. And then we come back in and we will have gel blaster fights, and gel blaster will be hitting each other with gel blasters for like 20 minutes after we get off the track. And we're all laughing and just running around the cars in between. And the fans are looking at us like we're crazy. But I mean, in reality, most of us are still kids that race that class, and we just all have fun and have such a blast with each other.
I love that, because like when I saw clips of what you guys do, it's like you guys are like family members and you guys care. So it's pretty authentic from what I observed, right?
Yeah, for sure. There's nothing else. I don't think I've ever really raced anything like it. And it's not like the lights cars or the E cars. Those are incredible to watch, but everybody's on their own team. Everybody's separated, which is how most racing is. So then to come into the side-by-side class and everybody be connected, everybody be under one tent, and nobody ever gets mad at each other. Nobody ever has anything against each other. We all hang out. We all talk to each other. We all help each other too. And so it's just such a tight niche sport, and it's such a tight group of guys that help there. And it's so much fun.
That's what I love, because I watched some clips from like the last couple of years, and I just think like, you know, NASCAR, when something happens with hard racing, people complain, but then you guys are just like having a good time, sometimes apologizing, and I was like, wow, this is such class. Where can we find this kind of stuff elsewhere? And I'm like, oh, Nitrocross has it, you know. So
sure.
It's so cool. It's really cool. And you know, obviously I've never driven a car. I just drove a Tesla Model S at COTA, which is not exciting, but for me it was. For anybody like me who's never been in a nitrocross car, what's the most comparable experience to being in that vehicle?
Gosh, I have no idea. I think in the side-by-side, it would be driving a side-by-side simply. Anybody, because it's essentially driving a Can-Am, is you can go buy one off the shelf and then take it to the woods trail, or take it on the road if you make it street legal like we can in North Carolina. And that is what we race. There's really not much difference to it. We put a roll cage in it, of course, and seat belts and race seats. But in all reality, it's just a car that somebody else can go by, which is insane. But that's what makes the class so unique. And then for the lights cars and things like that, I'm not sure there's anything that can compare to it. I think the closest thing to driving a E car would just be an electric car, because those cars are so fast. It's insane.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, when people think about an E car, you're just thinking, oh, carbon neutral and friendly to the environment. And you're like, when you put your foot in the gas pedal, you're like, no, yeah, this baby can go quick, you know? So I'm like, I have a lot more respect for sure. Oh, goodness gracious. I got a couple more questions before I wrap things up with you, Gray, and I'm having a lot of fun with you and hope you are as well. Now, obviously, this sounds like a job interview question. I hate asking these, but I have to anyways. Ideally, what's the happy path for you with your career if everything works out for you in the long run with motorsports?
Anything that I can drive. That is what I've always said. And I think that's like, people ask me what's the most fun thing you've ever driven. And I'd just say whatever I drove last, whether it's a sprint car, whether it's a side-by-side, whether it's a mini, whether it's a late model, anything for that matter. If I drove it last, and that's the last thing I have my mind set to, then that's the most fun thing I've driven, until I go get into something else. And it's just, I have so much fun with any aspect of any of it, that if an opportunity were to arise, I would take it. And whether it be asphalt or dirt or whatever it might be, road course, circle track, anything. I've always had the passion to go fast and be in a race car.
You're very old school for a young driver. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking AJ Foyt or Mario Andretti, like, or Tony Stewart even. And I'm like, you know what? This is exciting. I love this. So you literally could probably go Texas Motor Speedway Racing and you'd be like, I'll do a truck race, you know? I'll be cool.
Any of it. Put me in something and I'll drive it.
You're going NASCAR owners. Get Gray Ledbetter in the car for sure. Now, for my last question for you, based on your answers, I feel like this is going to be a really unpredictable answer here. If you had the opportunity to build a racetrack anywhere around the world, what kind of track would you build and where would it be?
You know, I only say this because I know that there actually is a place that could do it. There's there's like 300 acres right off the highway in Morganton where I live. And it's like when I say run off the highway, I mean you drive past it and you can see it. And it'd be a dream to put like an off-road track there because it's actually in like a pretty good area because we're only an hour and a half from Charlotte and it's North Carolina, which is head of NASCAR, but it's still motorsports in general. But that would be incredible. Other than that, I'm not sure. I haven't put too much thought in about it.
I like your idea anyway, because it sounds very unique and not your typical cookie cutter answer. So on point for you for sure. And is there anything you want to say to the fans, your fans, or anybody who's learning about you for the first time that's going to listen to this interview or read it?
I don't think so. I think just whoever wants to get into motorsports, if there's anybody out there, just put your mind to it. If you're younger, go to a go-kart track, go to a dirt track, get in a go you there's dirt flat carts too. I mean anything. We're going to drive minivans next week or this week. We're going to race minivans. So you really can race anything for that matter. And just as long as you put your heart to it and you keep your mind set to it, you can pretty much do anything.
Minivan racing. What will they think of next? Wow, that's my aunt would be happy about that. So I should
Yeah,
tell
I'm
her
not
about
sure.
this.
I just was got a text message that said, "Hey, be ready to go to Florida next week, and we're going to race minivans." I was just like, "Okay, sure."
Awesome. Well, I hope you get to stop by the hot seat again because this was a lot of fun. And it's nice to meet somebody refreshing who doesn't want to be one track minded and as multidimensional as you, Gray. So it was such an honor to talk to you for the hot seat here on TPF Live.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And that was Gray Ledbetter, who is a versatile driver who's currently in the Nitrocross series. It also does a bit of sprint car racing action as well. So my thanks, of course, goes to Gray Ledbetter for taking time earlier this week to talk with me and talk about her career. It's such a great story to get to introduce drivers like her. And in general, I'm just so excited to even have the opportunity to do what TPF used to do, which is to spotlight these new and upcoming drivers so that you folks at home can have a name to think about and watch and follow, not just from the interviews, but for the long, long road ahead. But it is almost time for us to go and wrap up episode number 96 of TPF Live. I know, man, Nathan, it's crazy. We're 4 more weeks away until episode 100, which I project to be early December. I mean, I know we started this, I think, during Kansas of 2021. Isn't it nuts to think that we're talking about this ahead of a 2024 LA Clash?
I know, man. Time's flying. I think I said this a couple weeks ago, but like this is like really the first project that we kind of undertook when I joined TPF a little over 2 years ago. So it's crazy that we're looking at 100 episodes of this already. So been really cool to see the growth. Been really cool to see the different guests that we've had on. I mean, we've had some pretty neat guests here on the show. So hopefully we can keep doing that for 100 more episodes.
I definitely think we will because folks at home and folks that are in the racing industry know that this is the world's fastest hour of racing talk. So that's how we like to do things around here in our side of town, as I like to say. But Nathan, always thank you for joining me on our show. You're a great friend and co-host. And for you fans at home, you're the best. And we want to hear from you. We want to get your feedback so we can make this the best podcast that you listen to. So share the word of mouth or post whatever it is to get our name out there. We want our fans to be our advocates. So keep that in mind during the off season so we can keep on delivering the goods. But with that, folks, it is time to go and wrap up episode number 96 of TPF Live. So for Gray Ledbetter and Nathan Solomon, I'm your host, Rob Tionks, and saying thanks so much for joining me on this edition of our show. Catch our previous editions of TPF Live on major podcasting platforms like Stitcher, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Join us again next week for episode number 97 of TPF Live as we'll bring back a familiar friend, but on the podcast side, it's her first time being on this show. That would be Olivia Haworth, who is a micro sprint race car driver from the Northeast. So it's going to be so cool to have her on our show for Thanksgiving race week. And as I always like to say, let's all go get that checkered flag. And until next time, so long, everyone.